What's up, everyone? This is episode 265 of the Wax Museum Podcast, where I talk about all things basketball cards from past to present to future. This is your host, Kyle, and as always, you guys can find me throughout the week on social media. My Instagram is at Wax Museum Podcast. My X account is at Wax Museum PC. Okay, so we are getting ever so close to the end of the NBA's regular season, and then the next week is the play-in tournament. I know I've spent the last couple weeks hoping that my team doesn't end up there. Sixth or better, right? That's all I ask. I really just don't want to play the Celtics in the first round. And yes, I know I've got a bunch of Celtics friends. They're going to make fun of me for that, but it's true. Just nobody wants to see them. Now, I'm not saying the Pacers will beat anyone else in the East either, but at least they would have a shot. You know, I want a competitive first round matchup. In fact, I talked about that a little at the start of today's conversation with Adam, and then we dove into his Knicks fandom and his Knicks collection as well, because of course the Knicks are going to have some sort of a role in that playoff picture. So I will have that conversation for you here shortly. Make sure you stay tuned for that. But first, I do want to run through a quick correction from last week's mail segment, and then I have one more card I want to talk about today as well. So last week, I talked about my 2018-2019 status draft night auto of Bruce Brown, and I later posted this card on social media. In the process, I reiterated the fact that I thought these were some of the best sticker autographs Panini had ever produced. I referred to them as sticker autographs several times. Well, I learned something this week. They were not actually stickers. And I've always been told that they were. So here we are. For 6 years, I've thought these were stickers. First off, because the 2017 version was. And then I had seen pictures of players signing the sheets on draft night. So I assumed that they were adhesive on some part of the card, even if it was just in the corners. But someone on social media explained that they were just master sheets that the players were signing with the NBA draft logo on them, and they were cut later. And then he closed his post by explaining, "I know for sure because I was the one that managed the production of them all." Well, you know, I can't really argue with that. So he and I got to chatting a little later on. There's a chance I might be able to bring him on the show. At least I'm working on it. But in the meantime, I just wanted to pass that along because I definitely don't want to spread misinformation, even if it was accidental. So you learn something new every day. All right, on to the mail. Just one card that I want to highlight from this week. It was a 2001-2002 Topps Pristine Sweat and Tears towel card of Travis Best. And if you've never seen one of these in person before, they're surprisingly thin for a towel relic. The front has a picture of the player, and then the cutout for the relic is in the shape of the letter S. But what's cool about these is that you can feel the material from the backside of the card as well, where the cutout is in the shape of the letter T. So remember, this set is called Sweat and Tears, hence the S cutout on the front and the T on the back. S for sweat, T for tears. You get it, right? Now, I know a lot of people have become desensitized to towel relics, thanks in part to the rookie photo shoot cards from the 2010s, where players would just pose with, maybe they were actually bench towels, but they looked like beach towels, and they'd cut them up for different types of promotional cards, and I get it. They were just fun sets. There's no harm in that, but they didn't really make a lot of sense, and a lot of people just don't like them. These pristine relics, on the other hand, feature towels that were used in the NBA playoffs, and it doesn't say what year specifically, but it seems to be that it has to be 2001. My thinking behind that is, number one, every team that's featured in the set was in the 2001 playoffs, and then two, that includes the Mavericks, who had been absent for the playoffs like 10 years before that. So really, it has to be 2001. Now, I doubt the towel piece was used by the specific player on the front of each card. So like, my card probably wasn't a towel that was used by Travis Best. And just for the record, the card doesn't make that claim either. The back just says they were acquired from the team. They probably just got a big batch of them all at the same time. Either way, I still think that's a lot cooler than some random relic from who knows where. I've said it before, but I think this is one of the more unique relic sets from basketball card history that really doesn't get a lot of recognition. And part of the reason is because the 50-card checklist lacks star power. Sure, it's got Dirk and T-Mac and a few other guys like that, but no Kobe or anyone that would really propel it to the next level. Luckily for me, though, 7 of the 50 players are Pacers. And I talked about picking the Reggie Miller up all the way back on episode 144. That was by far the toughest one to find, and I thought that was the final one I needed for my set. Well, a couple months ago, I was talking to Vintage Pacers Steve, and he mentioned how he still needed a few of them, including Travis Best. So I said, well, hey, I've got the set done. I went back to my scans to get him a picture that he could use for reference, and I realized I never actually got the Travis Best one, so I needed that one too. So I set up a save search, and I waited. One finally showed up after a month or so. I made an offer, and someone else grabbed it for the full price, which was not that high, mind you. It wasn't like, you know, I was just offering over like a few bucks. But if the choice is there to make an offer and it's a cheaper card, that's a decision I'm always going to make. I'm fine with that. Well, about a week ago, another one showed up with that best offer function. So I made an offer, seller made a quick counter, and the rest is history. So I finally finished the team set that I thought I had already finished. And hopefully at some point this week, I can get that card scanned in and update the picture I already had on file. All right, before I move into today's conversation, I want to remind you that this show is brought to you in part by the good people over at ComC.com, your home for buying, selling, flipping, and grading. Their consignment marketplace is home to over 33 million cards, from basketball's biggest stars like LeBron James and Kevin Durant to Marvel favorites like Spider-Man and Captain America. ComC has something for every type of collector. Visit ComC.com today to build your collection with your favorite cards. Okay, and then real quick, some of you guys have asked me for ways you can help support this show. The easiest way is my eBay affiliate link. And using this link costs you absolutely nothing, just an extra 30 seconds or so of your time. But it helps support the show. To access this link, simply go to waxmuseumpodcast.com, click the eBay logo, shop as planned, so whatever you are going to buy anyway, just click my link first, and the show gets a small commission in the process. Once again, that's www.waxmuseumpodcast.com.
Hey, this is Bob Nedelke, former Indiana Pacer, played on a few championship teams, had a lot of fun. You know, I'm listening to the Wax Museum Podcast, one of the best there is.
Okay, so joining me today is a fellow team collector, more specifically a Knicks collector, and we'll address that here shortly. You might know him from social media where he posts under the handle The Carter. That's THA_CARDER. Now, we're recording this on a Sunday morning, and our favorite teams are currently 5th and 6th in the East, respectively. Adam, for a while, I thought we were going to be the 3-6 matchup, and who knows, we might be by the time this segment airs. How do you think this whole playoff race is going to end up for our squads?
Oh, man. First of all, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor. I'm a listener, and this is my first podcast, so I appreciate, you know, you hitting me up and bringing me on.
Always fun to have Knicks fans on.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, the last few weeks have been wild for us, definitely. I think we've been sort of locked into that top five for a few months now since our big push in January. But I would say it's been a disappointing stretch here at the end. We got some bad news with injuries continuing. So I don't know. I think, like, for me, when I get this late in the season, I'm really just playing the matchup game. Who do we think we can take in the first round? I think right now, sitting at the 4-5, it looks like we're going to probably draw your Pacers or maybe the Magic, and I was worried we would have the Buck for a bit.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with that. I don't know how it's going to end. I mean, we just dropped one to the Bulls, which was pretty brutal. I know you guys have some big games coming up, so it really feels like it could go any which way. I mean, the Cavs keep losing. The 3 is technically still open.
Yeah, it's crazy. And really, and the Bucks have been dropping. The Bucks lost like 3 games too, and to like horrible teams. So it's crazy how 2 through 7 right now. I mean, by the time this podcast airs, third place could be 7th and the other way around. So now you mentioned the injuries and the bad news. So Randall is out for the year. OG is back, but I feel like he's not going to be back. I don't know what's going on with OG, and he's got a contract coming up too.
Yeah, it's a tough, this year has just been like even more. I mean, every year with the Knicks feels like a roller coaster. This year has been higher highs, lower lows than most. I think, losing Randall's big. I mean, you can see it if you watch any Knicks game that for the last couple of months, our second option is Dante DiVincenzo. And you know, he, which like on paper we should be a bad team, but like we've managed to hold on, which is pretty amazing. And the team's, you know, has been playing amazingly together to make that happen. A lot of guys, like we have probably five guys that are having career years in the same year, which is really cool.
Now, since we're already talking about the Knicks here, and that's mostly what you collect, we might as well start things off by learning a little more about your fandom. At this point, all I really know is that you grew up in New York in the 90s. So I'd love to hear more about how all this started, how it's progressed to where we are today, and you know, to where you're talking about Knicks playoffs basketball on a podcast here. So how'd you get to this point?
Yeah, it's been a journey. So yeah, I grew up in New York. I was born in the early 90s. So when I was starting to be a conscious person, the Knicks were like in their late 90s, like tail end of Ewing, Brewell, Allen Houston, like those guys. So I missed a lot of the like really classic 90s Knicks squads, but caught some of that magic, like 99, 2000, even the early 2000s, we had some good years. But yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I was really a big baseball fan, big Yankee fan. That was a nice time to be a Yankee fan. And then my mom also grew up in the New York area, and she grew up like in the 70s. So she had like the heyday of the Knicks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so she was a fan, and that was something that we kind of had together. And so I remember going to games in 99, in the early 2000s. I was at Marbury's first Knick game. And so, you know, there were some good years mixed in there. And then really, as I got a little older, the Knick got a lot worse. The dysfunction really peaked in those like mid to late 2000s. And so, you know, I wasn't as vigorous a fan. And then
it's hard.
You know,
it's hard to follow a team that's like that.
It's really tough. You just like, it's hard to put the game on, you know, and just know that they're going to blow it. I mean, the reputation for so long, and I'm sure you're well aware, was just like, they couldn't hold a lead. They couldn't close a game out. And that was for like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was rough. And then right in my like late high school, early college years was sort of the first resurgence of the 2000s, which was like the Amari Stoudemire, obviously Carmelo, and a lot of those teams. We had just like a lot of good players come through. We had a few playoff years,
yeah,
a couple
lot of
playoff
very
years.
Veteran heavy.
Tyson,
you know, Rasheed
Chandler.
Wallace, Tyson Chandler, Jason Kidd.
Yes. I mean, that was so cool. Having some of those guys and getting to see them suit up and play for the Knicks. And we had a couple of really good years there. And then obviously the whole Melo, you know, we didn't win anything. We won one playoff series with Melo, right? Which is not a good outcome. But
well,
I mean,
well,
if you can go to your home game and Melo's playing.
And on paper that it doesn't show like how exciting that Melo era was and how fun those teams were to watch, you know, and their short stint in the playoffs was pretty fun too.
Amazing. Amazing. And then, you know, Kristaps, which was like the most controversial draft pick and actually the only good thing that Phil did when he was running the team.
Were you booing on draft night?
Yeah.
You had to, right? I mean, everyone
was. Like,
was.
What are we doing? Like, who is this guy? And, you know, we knew that he was in the mix, but nobody thought, I think year three, he was an all-star. Like nobody saw that coming. So that like the late Melo years with KP was exciting. And then, I mean, the last few years have really been unbelievable. The new front office has turned things around. Leon Rose, and they're making like, all you have to do is look at the Knicks salary stack and you can see how strategic they've been and some of the trades picking up Hart. We got D Rose at one point for like a good deal. And in 2021, or when we made the playoffs the first time, we lost to the Hawks, but like D Rose was a huge part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And now Dante DiVincenzo. So, you know, the moves have started to pile up, and like, you know, it takes a few years to like dump, you know, get those bad salaries out and get new ones in and make the right draft picks and things. And so it's been super exciting the last few years.
I've got to ask you the same question I ask every Knicks fan in this time frame. What are your thoughts on Julius Randle? Where do you stand on him?
Good question. So, I mean, Knicks fandom is really conflicted, like really conflicted on Julius.
And rightfully so, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, you watch, like, if you watch his playoff performances, he's just not been, he's not delivered. And, like, he just has the spin move into the double team for a steal. It's just, like, the number of times you watch him do that is frustrating. What I do think is that with the emergence of Brunson as, like, you know, and it truly, like, a superstar point guard, I think Randall is an amazing number two.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was no way we were really going to be any sort of threat with Randall as the number one option. So I actually think it works great. I think he can create his own shot. He can draw attention. He can rebound on both sides. He can make the right pass. Like, he came, like, last season, he shot the three amazingly. So I'm a fan. I think he was right from day one. I actually was a Randall over Barrett guy. So while everyone was like, trade Randall. Like, I was like, RJ is bad.
Yeah.
And, you
and
know,
I love RJ too, but yeah, he wasn't very good there.
He's just not a winning piece for, at least, like, not with the group that we had. He's obviously a very good basketball player, but, yeah,
it wasn't a good fit.
No, I mean, for the third guy, like, you just need a defender who can shoot, and, like, he was neither of those things. And that's what OG's not a great shooter, but when you get Dante this year having, like, a top of the league type shooting year,
right,
and then OG being, you know, definitely one of the best defenders in the league, it comes together.
Like you said, they've done a good job of getting the pieces that they need. Individually, they're maybe not all that great, but, like, they fit very well. Randall, you need scoring, and he's going to give you that, even though, you know, it is what it is otherwise, but you need scoring. So
you need 20, like, you can't win games without two 20 point score. Like, it's very hard to win a game without two.
Yeah.
Guys
not in today's
20.
NBA, even with you guys having some of those stinker games in the '80s, you still need somebody to score some points.
Yep.
All right, so eventually you decided to incorporate cards into this fandom. And when I look at your Instagram, it kind of functions like a time capsule for the eras you just described. I see guys like John Starks and Stephon Marbury. You mentioned him. I saw, I think, a gold refractor on your page. Obviously, Carmelo Anthony, just to name a few. I'm assuming your collection wasn't always this focused, though. So if you don't mind, go ahead and run us through your collecting history and take as much time as you need here.
Cool. Yeah, happy to. And I think my story is sort of like a slightly different version of what I hear a lot. And, like, on your show, everybody's got their own story, but you know, you see the similarities. So as far as, like, being when I was a kid, I first got into cards through a friend of mine, Sam. Actually, he's Overtime Polls, Overtime Sam. So he's back in the hobby and, like, you know, doing a lot and helping with the Overtime League, and he got cards. He's working with Topps to make cards there. Really cool.
Oh, so like Overtime Elite then is what
Overtime
you're
Elite. Yeah, exactly. So he does all the card content related to Overtime, including, like, set up the partnership with Topps. They're making cards, which is really cool. I have a few, like, Amen Thompson.
Yeah, I was gonna say both the Thompsons came from there. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
And they have a top pick, Alexander Starr, going to be a top pick as well. But anyway, I was in, like, first or second grade. He was, like, a good friend of mine. And at his house, he and his dad just had this amazing collection of vintage baseball cards. And I thought it was just sort of fascinating. I tend to like old stuff and just, you know, thinking about, like, wow, somebody pulled this out of a pack 80 years ago. Like, how cool is that? So I was sort of drawn to that. And, so they took me along to some card shows. And this is, again, I'm like 7, 8 years old. I was a big Yankee fan. So most of what I did was just buy Yankees singles wherever I could. I still have all of them, which is really cool. I had a Yankee binder and then I had an everything else binder. And so I guess I was doing team collecting from the beginning a little bit. But really, like, I would go to the shows. I would, like, make trades with Sam. He was a Red Sox and Celtics fan because his dad, which was always a bit of a contentious thing. But that's really where it started. I would buy some packs at the 7-Eleven or whatever. But I was never, like, really deep in cards. And so fast forward to a few years ago, I was actually, like, late to the COVID train also. Like I did not, I came in sort of like post Apex. So probably like mid 2021.
To all the carnage that was left.
And what's funny is actually what brought me back was Top Shot.
Okay. And I probably have not said some nice things about Top Shot on here.
Yeah,
so.
No, and it was like it was a quintessential like COVID crazy spike that crashed.
Drew you to but Top Shot then, if you don't mind me asking?
Honestly, yeah. So Sam, same guy that brought me into cards as a kid, people were getting on like the Clubhouse. Like he was doing some Clubhouse shows talking about Top Shot, and I tuned in like see what my buddy's talking about, and it was cool. I mean, it was a really cool idea. I thought it was fun. I opened some packs, lost some money, but then it sort of like drew me back in, and he was getting on like hobby podcasts, and so I was tuning in to just like support him, but then really like re-piqued my interest. And that first like year or two, so 21, 22 into 22, I was like lost. I was totally lost. All I knew was like opening a pack of tops or maybe tops chrome, right? As a kid. So the number of products, I wasn't familiar with any of the products. I didn't understand grading. Like all my old stuff is ungraded.
You're
so
like,
I was just
where
like,
did Fleer go? All those
so
questions.
Lost. Yeah, yeah. I was so lost. And also I'd never done basketball, but like I just am not a baseball fan anymore. And my Knicks fandom has kind of stayed strong. So, and also like during COVID, I was just like quarantined. I was home. I didn't miss a single game, right? I was watching every single game. So in some ways, like I actually, my fandom intensified because what else are you doing other than like watching basketball? Anyway, so honestly, I made a lot of mistakes in those first couple of years. I was listening to podcasts. I was like taking advice from people I didn't know. And like, it's interesting because of when I came in, everybody was like riding this high of like, you know, Prism Silvers, and everybody had just like made all this money flipping and, you know, rip grade flip. Like everybody was just in a totally different place than like I was coming in from zero, basically. So I made some mistakes. I started like just buying all kinds of stuff that like didn't necessarily mean anything to me. And I was just sort of like, oh, that's less than that card is worth. Like, I'll snag it and like maybe I can flip it and make a few bucks, right? And that's sort of like where I started. And then I just got disillusioned with that pretty quickly. And I realized, first of all, like nobody should be telling me what to buy or like what they think is going to go up or like, you know what I mean? Like I'm smart enough to make my own judgment. And I also shouldn't be spending money on a product that I wouldn't be happy like stuck with. Right, basically.
And I'm guessing you probably did get stuck with some stuff to figure that out.
How's that?
So explain what you just held up for me, because
a Russell Wilson flawless man of the year auto to 10. This is like when he got traded before he even played a game with Denver. I was like, this guy's like, you know,
we were talking about him contending with the Chiefs for the division lead.
Yeah.
And
his cards were cheap and he already has had a great career. I was like, there's upside here, right? And then obviously, like, it's basically worthless. Now
it's like a coaster for your drink right now.
Yeah. So I made those types of mistakes, and the whole prospecting, just I was just like, this isn't what I'm here for. So really, I just made a decision. I stopped listening to those podcasts I was listening to. You were not one of them, to be clear.
Well,
at that
thank
time,
you.
Like, unfollowed people on Instagram. And because it was also COVID, like, my whole experience was, like, through Instagram and YouTube, really, and, like, podcasts. So I didn't have a lot of, like, I wasn't going to a lot of card shows. So I just, like, changed my feed. I started, like, looking for, collectors that I could just, like, I loved what they posted and, like, the way they talked about their cards and talked about sort of their passion and like what they enjoy about the hobby. And that I was able to sort of like recurate my experience towards that. And so then it was just about like seeing what these people that have been in this for a long time, like yourself, what they're posting, what they're talking about, what they're buying. And I see somebody post a cool insert. I'm like, ooh, it's like, are any of my players in that set? Right. And so you just sort of start to find stuff that way. And I like got the itch for gold refractors. And that's sort of where I just like set out on this mission like a year and a half ago, probably, of just like, what if I just got like all of the gold refractors of Nyx? And there's some other sets, 2013 Prism is the best Prism. We'll talk about that later. But they have an orange parallel and a blue parallel. And it's
right.
Like,
it's perfect.
Cool. Yeah. What if we just had like all the Nyx in the orange and blue? So I just started finding these little pockets, different sets that I was into. I have a collection of Marbury 90s inserts, because how can you get it? Like, where else can you, who else can you get like a jambalaya for that's not like incredible, like thousands of dollars? So it's like all the Knicks players in the 2000s are like cheap.
Yeah.
Right. They weren't that good. So
a lot of Channing Frye and David Lee and those kind of guys.
Exactly. So like, to me, it's about like finding cards that are really cool that I like looking at that maybe have a good story, and it's players that I have some nostalgia for at some point in my Knicks fandom.
So let's talk a little bit more about when you re-entered in 2021. And we kind of talked about how it was a chaotic time. There's obviously a steep learning curve. Luckily, you had Sam to help guide you through a lot of that. And you mentioned that Top Shot was an influence in getting you back in. And I don't know, you know, I feel like collectors kind of have this collecting gene. So I'm just wondering, like, have you collected anything else, or, you know, do you think eventually you would have found your way back in without Sam?
That's a really good question. I know you've talked about this a lot. I really am like, I've always, when somebody is like, oh, what are your hobbies? I'm like, I don't know. I don't really. The truth is like, no, I'm not like a collector in the way that you sort of like describe. I think I'm a fan, and like, I think I have some cool like memorabilia that I have like had gotten as a kid. I have some Starbury shoes that are signed. I have like a Carmelo jersey, and it's a Nuggets jersey, but a signed jersey from Carmel. I have like a few Walt Frazier basketball. I have like a few pieces of memorabilia, but I wouldn't say that I fit that like collector gene mold, to be honest. But now, like, I just love it. I love that feeling of like, you know, a card popping up that you've been waiting for and getting a chance at it, trading, you know, like, it's just, I don't know. It's fun, like just laying the cards out. Like, I can't wait for the day that I can put out my gold refractors just on the table and just be like, that's it. That's all of them.
It's so satisfying. I was going through a binder last night and redoing some of the pages, and I had to redo the pages because I don't have empty spots. I didn't leave empty spots for a lot of stuff, but I loved seeing those full pages. And now I've got all these like partial pages, and I went on eBay and it's like, I've got to fill these, which is a bad, that's why I don't do this very often when I, you know, I don't want to reorganize, because then I end up spending a bunch of money. So
Exactly.
Ron and I know Artest you have numbered your cards.
Yeah. I know you have your like printout.
Yes.
Prisms also. So yeah, I totally get it.
So, okay. So you talked about, you know, the whole grading or buying, flipping, grading, and then collecting, and kind of the evolution that you've taken. Have you got into the slab cracking? Like, what are your experiences like with that as a newer collector coming in?
Yeah. So for a while, it took me a while to figure out like how I wanted to present, like store and present my cards.
Right.
And I think like it's less of a thing when you're not like, once you get really focused and you're like on a set chase, like that becomes really important. I feel like I made the decision, like I have no interest in grading cards that I want to keep, unless it's like a card that is valuable and I'm like, I just want this to be like safe or something like that. But I really have no interest in doing that. So I ended up deciding to go one touch. So I have like a couple of these rows of, one of them is all gold refractors. And so that's what I decided. Now I have like five or six slabs that are in the gold refractor run. So far I've cracked anything eight and below.
Okay. So your threshold is eight and nine. All right. That's interesting.
I have some nines. I think if those are like the last ones left, like if I finish the set, I'll crack the nines. Tens, I'd rather go buy a second copy and sell the 10.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I just don't care that much. And But also, most of these cards are not expensive. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind too much, but it's more like I don't need a 10. You know? So why spend the premium?
Yeah, when I keep a 10 in a slab, kind of the thinking is more so I'm not ready to get rid of this, but there might be somebody out there that could replace it that would appreciate the 10 more. So I don't want to kind of mess things up for other people too, which is kind of a weird dynamic because you really do collect for yourself. I mean, I'm not collecting for other people. So it's a weird balance. And I was curious to see how you navigated that. I don't know if the printout of a card in a one touch would have quite the same effect as in a binder. Have you tried that yet?
I have not tried it. And honestly, trying to think, I think of the some of my more sort of like one-off cards, which tend to be a little more expensive, are in slabs, and I'm fine with that. But I don't think any of the any of my gold refractors that are in slabs they're all worth, you know, maybe like $80 and under.
Yeah.
So I don't feel too precious about them being in the slab.
Well, I will say for somebody that's only been back in for what, 3 years now, I look at your page, I see Bowman Chrome Gold Refractor runs. I see Topps Turkey. So like these aren't just sets that you stumble into. So I think we talked a little off air about how when you cut open a tree and you look at the rings and you can kind of, you know, you can tell how old a tree is. When I look at your page, it doesn't feel like somebody that's been back in for just 3 years. So I think you've done a great job of kind of curating the collection that you want. And with that being said, though, you're not opposed to ultra modern stuff. Because when I ask about topics you might want to discuss, you said, and I'll quote here, let's definitely discuss the Prism Gold rankings, which, hey, that's great for me. I did a whole episode on it. I'm really excited about that. So I've got my list pulled up here. I haven't added the 2023 version in the list, but I kind of know where it stands. And I'm curious to see where you want to go with this. So I'll let you start things off and kind of take it where you want. If you want to run through your top five or whatever, this is all you here. So what did you think about Prism Golds?
Yeah, I think we're pretty similar when it comes to the top. I think in the middle and bottom were different. I'm happy to just like run through. I wrote it down quickly before we jumped on. So I can just run like last to first real quick.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go through it.
Okay, so last I have 2021. I think like sometimes when the borders just get a little bit, I don't love when the borders just get a little bit like they feel super modern and like chunky. Mm-hmm. And so 2021, I don't love, which is funny because I actually own a couple of them. 2023 is next again. Like, okay. I just don't love that. Like
the border, the 2 years that you've mentioned, I think have the longer black lines kind of woven throughout the sides.
Yeah.
That sounds like that bothers you.
Yeah, I just don't love those borders that are like, they feel like super modern. I prefer like a more sleek kind of look.
Just a traditional gold box. That's what you want.
Yeah.
I'm with you there. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. So then I have 2016. It never 2016 never really did it for me. I don't know why. I think it just feels very different and a little bit out of place to me. Then I have 2022. It's got that like really wide border, but at least it's like a little bit cleaner in my mind. Then I have 2019. 2019 is sort of like the best version of the borders that I don't like.
Yeah. But also I've said it before, the worst prism design of all time, in my opinion, and the worst prism gold, but your rankings are your rankings, but
yeah.
Good God, 2019 was awful. I hated that year.
Yeah. It's funny. Then I have 2015. I know you actually are a big fan of 15.
I love 2015.
2015 was like too boring for me.
But so this is funny to me because 2015, what you described
it
that you wanted
like what,
is exactly what you want.
I know.
2015
see,
should
though,
be higher.
You'll see though. Like, so then I have 2017.
Okay.
Then I have 2020.
Okay.
Which is, again, these are all sort of like a little bit more, like a little bit simpler classic border.
Yeah, some of the 20, 21, 22, like they all kind of blend together for me because there were just some subtle differences.
Then I have 2018, which I just think is a pretty classic one.
Yeah.
Then I go 2014.
Okay. Where are you on your list? How high are you right now on 2014?
I'm top three now.
Okay, so third is 2014. By the way, no borders. No borders at all on 2014.
I know. There's no, I'm trying to like explain my thinking.
I get it. Yeah.
Really, it's just sort of like what I'm.
It's still a great, it's a great looking design. It just doesn't seem as prismy, if that's a word here, as the rest of the list.
I actually, some of the parallels, the parallels with like the short print, like the short printed ones?
Like the die cuts?
No, not the die cuts. Don't they have the, they have ones with like the bat, there's like a pattern in the background.
Yeah. So there was like in 2014, there was like a Blue Mojo. I'm trying to think what there were some variations.
Yeah, the photo variations. That's what I'm talking about. I just don't. I don't know. I don't think that worked.
Those personally don't feel like part of Prism canon to me. Like, totally. So when I rank 14, I'm just like forgetting about the photo variations then also had like the Panini logo in the
background. That's exactly what I'm talking
over.
About. I
okay,
hate that.
Yeah,
I hate
no,
that.
No, I'm not. But the gold, that's not in Prism canon for me.
I agree completely. But the gold is just like clean. It's a lot of gold.
It pops. Yeah. It looks great.
And then top two were the same. I have 2012 at number two, 2013 at number one. I just think those are definitely the best looking. I think they'll age the best. I mean, other years were sort of like big years based on the rookies or like what some of the like 2018, 2020 were sort of like, I feel like pretty iconic ones. But yeah, those top two are just definitely far and away the best for me.
Okay. So I love hearing your rankings for a couple reasons. Number one, it kind of validates what I thought because I was a little worried that I tried to remove all biases from my list.
Yeah.
However, I just feel a certain way about the older Prisms. And I told myself that as I was going through my list. And I think I even knocked like 2016 and 2017 down a bit because I didn't want to be too early year heavy. So I was worried. I was kind of wondering after I finished, like, are these years really as great as I think they are? Or is it just because I literally remember opening these boxes in 2012 and 2013? So you confirmed here that I think those years really were great.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could say I'm an objective person. I didn't open any of these products when they came out.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm purely like going off aesthetic. And I mean, obviously I'm aware of like the significance to the hobby of certain years, but I think,
well, I mean, I also remember, you know, like 2012, like I say, we, as in like the hobby, we didn't like Prism. So,
yeah. Which is so crazy to me.
It's funny now just how that turns around, and it makes me wonder like what crappy products from today are we just going to love in 5 years, which I don't know,
none.
You know? Yeah, none. Probably none right now.
What were you opening in 2012 then?
There were a lot of new products in 2012. So like Prism was brand new. I opened one box of that. I was mainly opening stuff that had like matte finish so I could get them signed. So that's part of why I didn't like Prism. It's like, oh, this is too shiny. I have to actually prep these cards. Same thing with Select. Like, man, this box is expensive. So I bought a mini box. Then I was buying
2012
like,
Select is bad.
Yeah. It's was really just ugly. Like, oh, there's another version. They were trying to hype it up at least at my shop.
Prisms,
like,
basically.
Oh, if you liked Prism, you'll love Select. It's like, well, what if I didn't like Prism? They're like, oh no, you'll still love Select.
We should, by the way, we should do a Select ranking too, because 2013, 14, 15, like some of those years are great products.
Okay. So
I'm
going to put you on that and
you're
going to come back
on
and you're going to be my guy because you're going to be the, I didn't open this when it came out objective opinion. And I'm going to be the, like, it was ruined when it went to retail guy. So we'll do that ranking. Maybe those of you that are listening out there, start making your list because it's going to happen. But I was also opening, like, I think Marquee was a new product that year. And then just like regular, I liked the cheap stuff like Panini. It was just called Panini. And then Hoops. I actually did really like Hoops that year. Those were amazing for getting signed. They had great game photos.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that double rookie class. So it's like how many, what was it, like Darius Odoms or like some of those guys, like how many Kyle O'Quinns am I going to pull here? I'm not getting the Kawhis and ADs. So
Knicks legends.
Yeah. I can't get any more of that stuff. So, okay, Adam, so the Prizm Gold list wasn't the only list I asked you to have ready for today. And now, of course, you're going to make your select list as well. But as I do with every other first-time guest, I want to give you a chance to talk about some of the centerpieces of your PC. We've kind of danced around it so far. I know you haven't mentioned it. It's obviously not that Russell Wilson card. So let's hear about your three favorite cards. Go ahead and start with number three and then work your way to number one.
Okay. Ranking's going to be tough here, but I think I can do it. I do have a clear top three. And I'll just say that before I jump in, that these are all cards that I was like well aware of. But if you asked me, like, if you could have one card for this amount of money, would it be that? Like, I don't know that it would be these cards. Because okay. These are cards that are rare that I had a shot at and I had to go out and get because I had that opportunity. So there's two one of ones in this list.
Okay.
So number three, and actually I don't have this card in hand. It's in my PWCC vault. I bought it a few months ago.
We'll have pictures though. We'll make sure everyone gets to see them.
Awesome. It is 2004 exquisite one of one base card. So it's not the patch. It's not the patch auto of Stephon Marbury. So is an awesome shot of Steph midair. It's the black. So I think there's two or three one of ones of the base in that year of exquisite. It's the black. To me, like, Marbury is one of my, you know, as far as players that I collect outside of like the team sets, it's him, it's Stoudemire, it's Carmelo are really like the guys that I buy. So to get a shot at and to own, like, you know, Steph was only on the Knicks. There's only a few years of product.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the patch stuff out of exquisite has Phoenix Suns patches.
Yeah.
Even though he's on the Knicks, I just will not buy that. I just won't buy it.
I call those Frankenstein cards.
Yeah. How can you have a patch card and it's like, it's clear, it's like purple and orange. There's no way.
Yeah.
So to me, like, to get one of the one of ones of exquisite, you know, so I don't know the number, maybe he has 10 exquisite one of ones as a Knick. So that was just an amazing one. I'm super excited. And it's actually on its way to me. So I can't wait to have that in hand.
The timing of you kind of coming in, I don't want to say this late in the game, but, you know, this far after that card came out, I should say.
Yeah.
And being able to obtain that, like, you probably don't realize how many serious Marbury collectors there were. They've kind of trailed off recently, but I know when that product came out, there were very serious Marbury collectors, and really there have been over the years. And I've known a couple of them. I honestly, I didn't know you were going to name that card. I'm surprised that was even available. Like, I'm really shocked that you have that card.
It literally hit PWCC Weekly. I think it was in November. And I was just like, what?
It probably got, like, buried with all that other garbage, like Kobe base cards and stuff that are in some of those weekly auctions.
It's a base. I don't know if people go in and they search like patch auto, right? There's so many cards in these auctions. But like, every week I'm putting an exquisite, like I just put exquisite in the search. And I'm just curious what comes up. But I was really lucky to get that.
I have begged them to put team names in titles because, like, there might be like three Pacers cards in 1200 listings, and I'll have to look at 1200 listings, and it's infuriating. Like, Com-C, it's such an easy really filter to add.
I know. Com-C is like, I love Com-C for that.
Oh, you know, I love Com-C. So I'm always sorting. I have a Pacers Com-C tab. Yeah. I have a Pacers Com-C tab on my browser open at all times. And I just refresh it whenever I'm home. So how I'm finding stuff on there. All right. Number two.
So number two is going to be, I mentioned 2012 Prizm to you. Another one that just like popped up, this one on Instagram. And I was just like, I could not believe my eyes. But I have 2012 Gold Prizm Amari Stoudemire.
Oh, wow. So it's a playing days one, too. That's really cool.
Oh, yeah. And the thing about Amari is that, again, like only a few years as a Knick, and it coincides with like great products.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. I also have the 2013 Gold. And I actually crossed that from a BGS 9 to a PSA 10, which is cool. One of the few subs I've done, but here's this guy.
So guys can't see it. He's holding up. So this one is a BGS 9. So it's interesting that you had a complete match 2012 and 2013. What inspired you to crack one of them out and send it in?
So honestly, there was a really low comp. So I bought the PGS 9 and then like a PSA 10 sold. I don't know how it got lost on eBay. I wish I had just bought a second copy because it was way too cheap. And so I was like, you know what? Let's just see. Like, I wasn't that scared. I'm just too scared to crack the 2012.
Yeah. It's really it. What no, it comes I, down I get to. It. I don't want to touch it either. I have a couple that are slabbed. I'm not touching them.
Personally, I just don't love like a chromium card in the BGS slab. I think it's like so big and bulky. So that was like really an aesthetic decision. And I was subbing a few cards and I was just like, you know what? Let's take a gamble. I figured I would be happy with a 9 and came back a 10, which is cool. But yeah, that's another one that it came up. Empire State Sports cards, just threw it in a story sale. I was like, I need this, please don't sell this. And I actually looped in Kai, card guru, on Instagram. He's like somebody that I've followed. I've done a bunch of deals with him. He did like a trade for sort of like, he does these like trade to acquire programs. So I sent him like a dozen cards and he bought that one for me. So that was cool. Number one is, again, like you'll see a pattern here. I don't know how this card just like popped up. This was just in an alt auction a couple of years ago.
It's too many marketplaces right now. And a lot of stuff is slipping through. That's great though.
So this, and I've posted this before, but it's the Jamal Crawford Super Fractor out of Finest 2004. Now, Jamal was on the Knicks for more years, so there's more products with him. This is also, this year, I think there were 3 Finest Super Fractors. I think there's a blue, a white, and a gold. This is the gold, to me, definitely the best of them. And it's just a really unique set. It's the card itself, the design is really interesting. It's not like full refractor. It actually has this sort of like matte kind of nuance to it. There's really cool details. And like, I mean, 04, you've got Jamal and Marbury backcourt. That was like the best that we had in the 2000s.
Right.
And
a lot of optimism to me, there too, when all that, went down.
It did not last long. So that's just a special card for me because of that nostalgia, because it's like, I mean, any super fractor for me of that, like whether it's Topps or Finest or Bowman or whatever from that run of like 03 to 08, 09, when they were making those in basketball, like is a special card. So that's gotta be my favorite card I have.
There are, there were a couple of Jamal Crawford super collectors out there. So that's, once again, I'm surprised you were able to land that one. In fact, I bought a Jamal Crawford 101 last year and the eBay seller didn't ship. I think there was some shenanigans and I think somebody ended up with it. I won't go into details about that, but that's how cutthroat the Jamal Crawford 101 scene is. Yeah. So for you to find that's pretty cool.
And I got like, I mean, it's a public sale, but like I paid a lot for it, but I think a lot less than other people would have paid for it. Yeah. And again, it's just like, and this has sort of been part of my learning, is like, there's just arbitrage, or not arbitrage, but like there's opportunity. If you just like are attentive to the market and it's like time consuming to check, you know, check eBay, Comsy, My Slabs, TWCC, all like every time, you know, with a lot of frequency, but you're going to get lucky eventually. If you're attentive to the market,
well, the hard work will pay off.
Yeah. And like, you know, I don't think that alt, especially, I mean, you just don't see that type of card on alt often. And like, I guarantee you that those Jamal super collectors were not in that auction. Cause if they were, it would have gone for 2 or 3 times the price.
Yeah. I don't even look at alt, and it's not that I don't want to, and I've stopped even looking at PWCC. It takes so much time to do PWCC, Golden, Alt. I mean, I'm still doing eBay, Comsy, right? Course. But like those other ones, it takes a lot of time. So, well, kudos to you and for going out and making it happen. I know you say it's luck, but there's also there's a work side of that too. You put in the work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I mean, those three are definitely far and away. I've got some other guys that I love. I have my Marbury Jambalaya, which is, again, like I'm a Marbury Knicks guy, but there were so few years, and he's in, he was just so good in the late 90s that he's in like all of the best insert sets.
Right.
And of those sets, he's usually the cheapest or like bottom two or three cheapest. So
right.
to be able to get a card like this,
well, and
for
Allen
hundreds,
Houston
not
wasn't in
thousands.
those sets, and
Right, exactly. Like the,
Ewing
we
was
didn't
getting
have anybody.
phased out.
Yeah, Ewing's obviously got PMGs, and you know, not the inserts though. He's not
right.
in a lot of the inserts, and he was just late in his career. I've got a couple of others. I've got my a nice Carmelo exquisite card here, but yeah, I think those three are just like the clear top for me.
Well, do me a favor and make sure we get pictures of those. I mean, they're probably already on your profile, but I want to make sure people can see them this week.
Yeah.
Adam, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to come on the show, and then thanks in advance for getting your select list ready. I've got some homework
yeah.
to do because I've not always been a big select fan, and
yeah.
a lot of it was because it was hobby only for so long. I only lived by a hobby shop for a few years, which was kind of
yeah.
that 2012 range. So I'm excited about that. That'll be something here. And maybe, who knows, maybe that'll be a good off-season episode. Because,
yeah.
you know, no new basketball on. That'll be perfect. So before I let you go here, though, I want to give you a chance to plug your social media handles or anything you might be working on or anything specific you're looking for. These next few moments here are yours.
Awesome. Thank you. And it's been a pleasure. It's been a lot of fun. This is our first time actually speaking like face to face, although I know your voice well, obviously. But yeah, this was a lot of fun. And as far as me, I'm the Carter, THA_Carter. Yes, it's a Lil Wayne reference. No, I'm not like a Lil Wayne super fan. I just thought it was
I did
was
message
funny.
Him this week asking. I said, is that a Lil Wayne reference? Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. You know, I was just coming in. I was like, what's like a just like a funny handle I can come up with related to cards. So the Carter, I'm on everything with that. And then in terms of what I'm looking for, I still have a ways to go in my gold refractor chase. I have 8 Bowman Chrome golds left, one or two pretty much from each year. I'm just going to leave that on my page. So if you come check it out, I'll have that list. Topps Chrome Gold as well. That's really it. I think like other than that, there's some guys out there that will like send me eBay listings that pop up that they think I'm interested in. I appreciate that very much. If you just see like a unique Knicks card, yeah, send it my way and I'll appreciate that.
Yeah. And don't assume he's already seen it. I know I have people will send me stuff and then apologize. Like, no, that's like, I'll look at every listing. Even I'll have 4 or 5 people send me the same thing. That's great though. I really appreciate
yeah.
it. So same thing. Don't be afraid to send Adam those Knicks listings. All right, Adam. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah. We'll talk soon.
All right. Well, there you have it. Thanks again to Adam for taking the time to come on the show. I'm really looking forward to his select rankings, and I'm going to have to do a little bit of homework on that because there were some times where I kind of checked out on select, but I am excited for that. That will probably come this summer. Maybe there was something we talked about today that resonated with you. Maybe you want to give some more feedback on the Prizm Gold rankings. That's great. Feel free to reach out to me on social media. You can find me on Instagram under @WaxMuseumPodcast or X under the handle @WaxMuseumPC. In the meantime, if you like the content I'm providing, please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcast. Hit up the website for my affiliate links. Tag Taco Bell and let them know they can pay me in burritos. And until next time, this is the Wax Museum Podcast.